everybody, welcome back to One Club Shorts podcast. We got the normal crew today. We got Glenn, we got Will. Not a ton of golf to talk about. We got some of Will's favorite topics in LIV. We got a little bit of Tiger and Rory's indoor golf stuff that's now coming out and actually looks almost as bad as LIV in a lot of ways, as far as like logos and promotional pieces. But you know, in reality, who knows where it's going to go? It could be awesome. It could, with all these kids that love watching gaming stuff now, not really something I'm super excited about, but it's, you know, could draw a huge audience. We'll see. But a lot of football to talk about. Some great college stuff going on. Rankings are getting, you know, down to the wire with the last couple weeks of some really big games that are going to determine who makes the playoffs this year. And there's a couple folks that are just on the fringe where one loss is going to shake up the whole thing. So, we've got a lot of good college to talk about, and then some pros that are not going to be, very much fun for Glenn and I to talk about, but I guess all we probably should, just to get on the record with, you know, me saying that yes, Giants should draft a quarterback in this next, you know, upcoming draft, regardless of where they end up in this season. But we'll get to all of it. So, well, I guess we should start with some of the LIV stuff because it's, you know, top of mind in golf, you know, with being in the off season and everything.
So, I mean, obviously the biggest story in golf is Taylor Gooch is your individual LIV golf champion for this season. The fans of the Vampire Diaries, Teen Wolf, and One Tree Hill are now obsessed with him after watching his incredible performance on the CW.
Mission accomplished, LIV.
I think he, what was it? Something like he doubled his career earnings as a golfer by winning the LIV championship, which I guess, like, good for you, Taylor Gooch. Even though you acted like you thought you would still be allowed to play on the PGA Tour after doing this, and now I guess you might. You won't have to ever again. You're set for life. So good for you. I'm sure we all watched the thrilling championship at whatever course they played it at, and he won by however much he won by. You know, we all just love LIV Golf so much, and the product is so great. And, you know, it's so great to see that in a season that was so important for them, their biggest star won. And I think that's the takeaway here.
I think you got to get off the LIV hate wagon at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. It's still golf. There's still some great golf that's being played. You know, at the end of the day, it's another product that's out there. Yes. Do they have a lot of stuff to figure out and fix? Absolutely. Who knows how long they're even going to be around for? So I don't know. I think, you know, good for Gooch. I think it's good amount of money. I think they're going to try and shake it up again with some of this off-season trades and free agencies. But again, it's not going to affect any of the big names anyway. So I don't know where that's going to go. So we can talk about that a little bit if we want, but at the end of the day, it's still golf, you know, it's still better than nothing, you know. Heck, the PGA is now going, you know, the indoor route. So I think everyone's trying to capture the audience any way they can. If you asked me a couple of years ago, if they'd ever start an indoor league, like they're doing, and it sounds a lot more interesting than I originally thought as far as like hitting off real grass and whatever, but still it's just an out there concept. So I don't, who knows if it's going to work or not. Seems super interesting, at least in, you know, in concept. In reality, I don't, who knows if it works or not, but.
So I have a take about that.
Your hate for LIV is just so passionate.
Mm-hmm. Well, so I don't like LIV because it sucks. Like it's impossible to watch it both.
Do you hate Canadian football and the XFL this much as well? Do you hate minor league baseball? Do you hate, you know?
I mean, I certainly don't religiously watch any of those things just because they are football or baseball. Like the problem with LIV is that it sucks. So the scoreboard is stupid. The team concept is stupid. The shotgun is stupid. Most of the golfers suck. Most of the courses suck. The tournaments aren't interesting. And you keep getting told that it's the greatest thing in the world. the difference between LIV and the TGL is they're not trying to sell me the TGL as competition to the PGA Tour. As far as I'm concerned, the TGL is like the home run derby. Am I going to want to watch it every week? Absolutely not. But is it going to be something interesting to tune into because they're playing in a stadium and there's a green complex that can change shape in real time? Like, they're not trying to sell me the TGL as the Players' Championship. But when LIV goes to Orange County National, which again is a terrific golf course for someone like you or me to play, but I don't need to see Brooks Koepka playing it. And they tell me that these golfers care so much about this, and this is the most important tournament in the world. And, you know, they're playing for however much money. Like, I don't care how much money they're playing for. I don't care about this stupid team format. I don't care about their dumb logos or team names. The bottom line is LIV can't decide if it's a serious competitor to the PGA Tour or if it's like this weird fun golf thing where you're either supposed to care about the money or the format or whatever. Like, if they picked a side, if they picked a lane and really committed to it, there might be something there in that concept. But we've talked a million times on this podcast about how the concept sucks and they're doing an awful job of getting people to care about it. So no, when especially during football season, like, I'm going to watch LIV Golf instead of Texas, Oklahoma. Like, that's ridiculous. It's absolutely absurd. They don't know when to play their tournaments, how to structure their tournaments, how to structure their league, or how to get me to care about it.
Once again, we're just being xenophobic. You're just being xenophobic. Remember, this is a world tour. It's not about the United States. They're not just looking for U.S. viewers.
Well, then they should go try to find viewers who aren't in the U.S. But when you act like your biggest tournaments are in Washington, D.C. and Doral, you're clearly trying to butt heads with the PGA Tour. And the product sucks. If the product was good, I would say there's good golf. There just isn't.
Well, I'm gonna do a prediction right now. It's going to be a very interesting period over the next 3 months for LIV, because the merger of LIV with the PGA Tour has to go through.
Yes.
PGA Tour is done. They go bankrupt if they don't merge. They can't afford their present day model. They need the influx of money, Saudi money. They need the investors that come with it. The PGA Tour is done. So now you've got this period where LIV is LIV next year. Will it be LIV in 2025, or will they finally merge in 2025? So if you're John Rahm, you have 1 year and they're going to throw $150 million at you to play LIV. I think John Rahm, by pulling out a Tigers entertainment show, is saying, I'm going to LIV. Why else? No one thumbs their nose at Tiger Woods. And he's like, oh, it's on Mondays and it's in the, you know, Boca or Palm Beach, and I live in Arizona. It's like, yeah, it's a 2.5-hour flight on your jet, your private jet. You're there and back. You don't thumb your nose at Tiger and Rory and everybody else unless you've made a decision to go to LIV. I think in the next couple weeks, Rahm jumps. I think Hovland's on the fence. So there are some very good entertaining.
Then you must have Patrick Cantlay going.
I don't think. Well, you never know if you throw enough money at him.
That's the idea, right?
He's not moving the needle, but these guys have a finite window now to jump and get that LIV money, knowing full well in 2025, it's back to normal. PGA Tour takes over as the main tour. They're back in official world golf ranking points. They're back in majors. They're back in all the big tournaments. It's going to be very interesting to see what that does to the PGA Tour product for next year. How many guys can they lure to LIV for 1 year to maybe they say, hey, we're the big tour now?
Isn't the question, though, What incentive does LIV have to poach these guys away from the PGA Tour anymore? Like, wasn't Make the sure idea that... But the deal has to go through.
Yeah.
So like, power. What... Why... But we know that Yasser just wanted to, like, get into golf, right?
Yeah.
And by getting the merger approved... You know, by making it happen, by getting it agreed to, he is in golf intractably. So
only monetarily. He wants the power. He doesn't have the juice yet.
But doesn't he have the juice by controlling the funds? Like, I don't see. Obviously, we don't know what the combined entity is going to look like, but I don't see any, like, I don't know what LIV has to gain from trying to be the premier tour in the world for 1 year, and then it merges back with the PGA Tour and presumably things are basically back to normal.
The more bullets he puts in his, you know, holster before there's actually pen to paper, the stronger position he's going to have, right? So if he starts, even if he has to throw a little bit of extra money and get these players over, before that negotiation gets finalized, it gives him absolute control to say, hey, if this deal doesn't go through, that's fine. Look who I got. Like, look at you just lost another four or five of your big international stars, and they're going to come play with me, and I'm going to keep doing this time and time again until you just run out of money. Like, so the more and more they build this up, it puts the PGA up against it, where they're going to say at some point, not only are we going to take your money, we'll give you rights to do this and this and this. We're going to give you a seat at the table. You're going to get to say this. He's now controlling the conversation more so than ever. Mm-hmm. If it goes to bed now, it's kind of like that. But PGA can also push back and say, hey, I still got my Tiger. I got Rory. I got blah, blah, blah. I got this. I got that. You start taking some bigger names out of it. And I have no idea if Rom or Hovland or anybody come over. So it's a great prediction. It'd be fun to see if it did happen, just to kind of throw some craziness at this whole thing. But in reality, it does make them incredibly, incredibly powerful in this negotiation.
Mm-hmm. So two questions. First, you know, I have friends who are Chicago Bears fans, and they really want the Bears to have the number one and number two picks in this upcoming NFL draft. And they want to take Caleb Williams and Marvin Harrison Jr. And they want to say, those are the guys who are going to lead the Bears to greatness. And what I tell them, and I tell this to friends of mine who are fans of the Jets too, there are certain organizations that this is just true of. I tell them, look, no matter how good Caleb Williams and Marvin Harrison Jr. are, they're going to suck because they're on the Bears. And when I look at LIV Golf and I see that they have Brooks Koepka and Dustin Johnson and Phil Mickelson and Patrick Reed and, you know, a star-studded cast and a higher percentage of stars than the PGA Tour because it's only 48 guys and the product still sucks, it makes me skeptical of how much I'd like it if it had John Rahm and Victor Hovland and Patrick Cantlay and Scottie Scheffler and whoever else they could get. Like, I'm sure there's some point way down the road where they reach critical mass. But one of my questions isn't LIV at war against itself until it figures out the format that sucks that nobody likes? That's the first question. The second question is, wouldn't it be wiser if LIV is trying to prepare for this merger to be thinking about how you can make LIV into something interesting and valuable instead of a competing tour? Obviously, after these entities merge, they're not just going to run as competing tours. It wouldn't make any sense. So shouldn't they be figuring out how do you do something interesting with an alternative format globally for what was LIV Golf once it merges with the PGA Tour? Like, it just feels to me like if you actually care about creating interesting golf for people to watch, you'd be thinking about how to make something complementary and not something that's a competitor. Just me though.
Well, so I think is going to happen. Oh, go ahead, Glenn.
Well, I have to say, I already forgot your first question because I'm old.
Doesn't LIV make itself suck? No matter how many stars it has.
No, it's a growing. It's they knew they were going to lose money for 5 years at least. So in 1 year, they've already got TV, global TV contracts. They're getting YouTube exposure. They have revenue coming in. The thing is, they don't need it. They've got FU money. This is just some sheikh's play toy, and he can buy whatever he wants. He's a rich kid who gets all the toys and gets, you know, instead of the big wheel, he had the mean green machine. Yeah. So they've got all the money. The fix is easy. Make the PGA Tour / LIV like the Premier League. That's the show. And then you have the European Tour, the PGA Tour non-elevated events, the Asian Tours as the places where you get relegated to or you move up. It's a simple model. You make them, it's a worldwide tour of like 25 events in the majors. And then the other, you know, what's that, 22 weeks, you can get relegated and you can move up. You can earn your chance to move up. And if you don't play well on those, the 25 events, you get relegated to one of the tours. And then you got name players going down the little tours. People are watching. It's a little bit of a watered down product, but the main product is now big. It's huge. It's everybody who's playing. Not only is it the best players in the world, is everyone's playing well. So people will watch. That product now becomes huge. And that's a win for the PGA Tour. And it's a win for the owners of LIV. And then the other tours benefit by exposure, worldwide exposure. That's my.
I think what also is going to happen too. The first wave of people went just for the bag of money. This next wave of players, if they do go, they're going to go and say, and it's a smart group. With that, it's a lot more vocal than the first group that went in certain ways. They're going to say, all right, we'll come, but here's what you got to change. We want better golf courses. We want 4-day events. We want this. We want that. We want better marketing. Like, if you want us to come, yeah, I want your $100 million, but I also need you to make these changes. Otherwise, I'm not going to play in some minor league, you know, program. And I do think, listening to someone like Rom, he's not only been vocal from the very beginning, but he gets it. Like, he gets the sport. Mm-hmm. He gets the marketing. He gets the exposure. He'll be the first person, I think, to stand up and say, I'll make money anywhere I go. I'm that good and I'm that confident in myself. I'll make the money and I got the sponsors. If I'm going to make this leap, here's what I'm going to need you to do. And I think that's what will start to happen. They'll put a board together of players that'll say, okay, great. What worked and what didn't? Let's stop being lazy. 3-day events, that's stupid, right? Let's go to 4. All right, this shotgun stuff, it's not really working, whatever. These stupid teams, it's great in theory, but how do we, if we keep it, how do we change it? If we get rid of it all, do we just go back to a normal format? Then we're just exactly like the PGA. What do we need to do to be different? I mean, these guys have been around enough where they probably have 1,000 ideas. But I have a feeling you'll start to hear more and more each year from the players if you're going to want them to either come over or stay. So I don't know. I don't think it's just not going to be Greg Norman's voice for much longer.
Yeah, no, I still think the carrot is for those guys is you get a big bag of money this year, and then in 2025, it's like nothing ever happened. You're back to playing all the events you want to play, and there's no penalty. All you did was give your family generational wealth, and you bow out of the major. But they're in the majors, right? So
they're in the majors.
So Rahm's going to be in the majors. Hovland's world ranking probably won't drop enough, so he'll be in the majors. There's a couple other guys there that, you know.
Yeah, I think almost everyone you mentioned finished high enough.
Yeah, but it's gonna put the boot on Jay Monahan's neck. Say, hey, we don't need the money. You guys need us. We don't need you anymore. We could take over your whole tour, because if you don't make something happen, the PGA Tour is going under because it can't financially sustain the model of the elevated events and the player influence money from social media. They don't have the money anymore. And, you know, I'm sure the TV networks are up in arms. Like, you know, you guys promised us X amount of top 50 players every week. And if half the top 50 players are gone to LIV, I'm sure there are mechanisms in there that they're going to get a refund at some point. So
do you think there's any real estate left on Jay Monahan's neck for boots?
I feel sorry for that guy. I think he wants this over faster than anybody else, so he can just ride off into the sunset.
And I think that's true.
Enjoy his money. I feel bad for him. But
I don't know how bad I feel for him, but I don't feel jealous of him.
But at the same time, he made a lot of mistakes. Man, he said,
absolutely.
Mickelson called him out, and everything Mickelson called out the PGA Tour for, Mickelson was right. They were sitting on bags of money. But now they spent it.
I think if you get into the specifics of what Phil said, I don't know that he was necessarily right about everything. Like, there was the billions of dollars of NFTs comment. Like, I don't know that exists in the world, but yes, he was broadly correct.
Well, the only purpose of NFT is to launder money. I mean, that's it, right? Like, I'm going to buy a kilo of drugs from you for $1 million, but we can't do this legally. So, hey, I took this picture of my dog this morning. This is the only picture of my dog that exists from at this very moment. I value this picture at $1 million. And so I'm buying that NFT for $1 million. So here's the picture of my dog. Here's your kilo of Coke. Everyone's happy. There's no other possible reason for the invention of NFTs other than to launder money.
This has been Glenn's summary of Web3. That was awesome. That's one of 57 episodes in. I think we just peaked.
Hence, to summarize, don't invest in crypto.
There you go. This is not investment advice, but it is advice about what not to do. Craig, we'll take from our peak to what might be your lowest point in this podcast history. Your Michigan Wolverines, who are undefeated, one of the favorites to appear in this year's college football playoff, participants in each of the last two college football playoffs, winners against the Ohio State Buckeyes in consecutive years, coached by really a guy who's had success at every level, at every stop, whether it was winning New Year's Six games at Stanford or going to the Super Bowl with the San Francisco 49ers or resurrecting the Michigan football program that had been in the doldrums since the Lloyd Carr era and Jim Harbaugh. They are embroiled in a scandal. And I hate to say it, but it seems pretty cut and dried. The NCAA has a rule against advanced scouting, and the NCAA not only knows that Michigan personnel were buying tickets to go watch their opponents play in person, but also that they were then videotaping the sidelines at those games to get their opponent's signals. And then that Connor Stallions, who is the most fascinatingly ridiculous person maybe who's ever existed, complete like wild man, look into him if you haven't, is like on the sideline standing next to the OC or the DC or Harbaugh with a sheet that has like the signals on it and what it means. So, Craig, look, Michigan has come a long way since that 2020 season when they were horrible and ducked Ohio State. And people are starting to question just how much of it is truly earned and how much of it is ill-gotten. So, two questions. First, as a Michigan fan, what is your reaction to all this? Second, as a football coach and general knower of the game, how much of an impact do you think this really made?
Wait, so I just to be clear, is this the investigation that is allegedly being brought up through the Ohio State coach's family full of investigators? Did you know that?
It doesn't. I did know that. I don't think it matters. Does it matter how you get caught cheating if you're cheating?
Well, first, they haven't been caught cheating. Has the NCAA brought anything against Michigan?
Not yet, but the NCAA works famously slowly.
No. The answer to that is no. So they have
the answer
not
to that is
wrong.
Not yet. That is obviously not how this works. If I go down the street and I run, if I go down the street and I rob a convenience store, before I have been arrested and convicted, did I or did I not do something wrong? I did something wrong. It may not have been adjudicated. I may not have been punished for it, but we know what the NCAA rules are and we know what Michigan personnel did.
You do not know that as fact. Michigan has not stated that any of this stuff is true. So you've got a bunch of alleged, conspiracy theory.
Conspiracy theories, except that like there's video of these people at these games doing exactly these things. There are records of Michigan personnel buying these tickets to be at these games and then using them. So aside from all the proof, it's alleged. I agree. Aside from all the proof, it's alleged. Absolutely.
Have you ever heard of AI? There's a video of Tom Cruise singing.
Allen Iverson?
Tom Cruise.
The answer? From Malcolm Wilson, Virginia?
What?
You were talking about AI, right?
Yeah.
Went to Georgetown, played for the Sixers.
Well,
went to Oak Hill Academy.
They're 100% innocent.
And so what is your reaction to the allegations then? Let's do a thought experiment.
Every college team in the world has scouts at every game. They have film access to every game. In Little League football, we have film access to every game.
So you're conflating things here.
It's crazy that this is even coming up. No, I'm not.
You're conflating things here. Yes, you are. You're conflating things. College teams have access to the broadcast of their opponents' games, and they have access to the All 22. If you consult the NCAA,
college teams have people in the stands scouting other teams at any given point.
Well, Michigan certainly did, and that is explicitly against the NCAA rule.
That is not how this works. Every college team has scouts at every game. Looking at things for the game for the next week.
You should go prove that then, because advanced scouting is against the rules of the NCAA explicitly.
No one ever breaks NCAA rules.
No, people break NCAA rules all the time, and then sometimes they get punished for it. And Michigan is about to. So, Craig, let's assume the allegations are true. Let's do a thought experiment. Assuming the allegations are true, how do you react?
It's a non-issue for me. It's a crock. The whole thing's a crock. And it's not just because it's Michigan. If this was against Alabama, if this was against anybody, the whole thing is the biggest piece of work that I've heard yet. It's a crock.
I got to side with Craig on this one. I agree. Everyone does it. Every coach, you don't even have to have, it used to be you'd have to bring in a big beta cam so you could get busted. Now everybody can sit there on the sideline just doing this and watching the plays. It's
a nonsense.
A mathematician, like, was the guy from Michigan is like some sort of code breaker or something.
They do keep saying that. That I think is a phenomenal cover story. Oh, yeah. Look, we just have this Marine. He's so good at decoding the signs.
He's just better than everybody else at doing it.
I actually stopped following the story. I read the first little wave of it, and I'm like, this is so dumb. I don't even want to. Like, if they're going to go after Michigan, because NCAA obviously has something out for Harbaugh, and Harbaugh obviously hates the NCAA, so who knows where it's going to go. But at the end of the day, it's such a non-story. And if the kids get punished for something like this, it is absolutely crazy. They better prove beyond a shadow of a doubt, that they've broken the rules and that not every other team in the NCAA is doing the same.
Well, they don't have to prove the latter.
They don't.
The NCAA specializes in selective enforcement.
What are they going to do then when every other team starts funneling in information about, oh, wait a second, my rival's been doing the same thing, and my rival's been doing the same thing, and my rival's been doing the same thing? Are they going to suspend every free team in the NCAA?
No, probably not, because that's not how the NCAA operates, because it's an organization without integrity that selectively enforces its rules. Remember when it came out that no UNC basketball player had gone to class for a decade and they just didn't do anything? Like, the NCAA specializes in picking an allegation, making an example out of a team, and then having the same thing come up and going, look, who cares? I think it's pretty clear what's going to happen with Michigan in this case. That the fact that the NCAA is a BS organization without integrity does not change the fact that Michigan broke the NCAA's rules.
I still don't think you could. How do you punish a program that did nothing more than do pattern recognition of something done out in the open? Right, they weren't in the locker room. They weren't. There's the four signs. One's got a rubber duck. One's got whatever on it. It's like they just watch the pattern and watch the play over a series. It's done in public. It's done out in the open.
Literally the dumbest allegation they could have possibly come up with, and it's folks like Ohio State saying we don't know how to beat this guy. Let's figure out how to ruffle some feathers, and the NCAA saying, yeah, sure, I guess. That's all it is.
But there's a difference between you not liking a rule and that rule not existing. Like, whether or not it's stupid that there are rules about when you can be at games that your opponents are playing, that rule exists.
I'm not even admitting the fact fact that Michigan broke the rules. I don't know. I don't go to Michigan. I don't know what the rules are. You don't know that either. You shouldn't make that allegation. There's a ton of shit out there, but who knows what's true and what's not.
Craig, the evidence is
had something. If they actually had something, they would act upon it right away.
That's not true. The NCAA has never acted right away in its history.
They win a national championship for the first time ever and then do something about it, because that's the way they are. But yeah.
So I think I know what your answer to this question will be, but people, Michigan haters and just regular people, are going to look at this season, regardless of what the findings of a Big Ten investigation are or an NCAA investigation are, and they're going to put an asterisk on it. Your response to those people?
Live a happy life. I can give a rat's ass. I mean, at the end of the day, why do I care one inkling of what those people think about a rule that isn't a rule that may or may not have been broken? Who cares?
So it's definitely a rule. You can't now tell us the rule doesn't exist.
No, I'm not saying the rule doesn't exist. I'm just saying, does anybody in the NCAA actually give a crap about it? Mm-hmm. I don't know.
So there's a very good article.
At the end of the day, it doesn't bother me. Is it a funny story? Absolutely. Is it a funny story because this guy seems to be a little bit out there and dress up in disguises allegedly? And like, yeah, that part's funny.
He's more than a little bit out there, and it's awesome. Like, this guy is writing 500-page manifestos about Michigan football. He decided when he was in high school that he wanted to be the head coach of Michigan, and that the best way for him to do that was not to go to Michigan. It was to go to the Navy because he wanted to be like Mike Krzyzewski. Like, this guy is fascinating. There should be a Netflix documentary about this guy. There should be books written about him. He is, like, absolutely enthralling. But the idea that someone who's like psychotic about the Michigan football team would go, hey, I know what I should do is go break some rules to get us an unfair advantage. Not that out there to me.
This whole thing is out there. You're like I said, you're penalizing a team for having eyes.
No, you're not. You're penalizing
the same thing like when a quarterback's calling audibles. Should the other team and the coaches, the defense, have to cover their ears? Like,
it's a different thing.
La, 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 la. I can't hear this because, you know, Josh Allen drops back. You know, Josh Allen will call J.R. Smith or LeBron James. He's got these, you know, uses the athlete names for certain plays when he's audibling. There's probably a pattern there if someone listens to them and goes, and you know, it's a pretty easy code to break.
And people do.
But it's out in the open. So why? Well, how's that any different than looking at signs and going, the duck means it's a, you know, sweep left?
Because hey, one is something that you're doing.
Change your signs. Change your signs.
We got our signs.
People seeing it. Change your signs. It's
people don't use
giant signs. Why do you have to use giant signs on the side?
Well, so this is where I think this is going, Glenn, is there has been for years, I mean, for decades, in the NFL, we've had the radio and the helmet.
Mm-hmm.
And the plays get called in from the sideline. And in college, they keep, no matter what technology, whether it's on your wrist, whether it's in your helmet, the NCAA keeps saying, no, you can't do that. It would not be all that surprising to me, given that we know the NCAA is an organization without integrity that specializes in selective enforcement, for this to just be a big front for the NCAA to be like, you know what? We should definitely do the radio and the helmet thing without having to say we've been wrong about this for 30 years. It would not surprise me if that was one of the dynamics at play here, because that's how you eliminate sign stealing.
Yeah, it's win-win when you eliminate it. Michigan's exonerated because everybody's doing it. Everyone moves on.
Well,
they have to be rolling it next week. You can't let Michigan go on in this sort of no man's land, especially playing Penn State this weekend. You got a big game. It's all, you know, it's a trap game. But Penn State's a good team. You can't let this cloud over. Hey, what if we win this game? Then we have to play Ohio State and get into the playoffs. And then they come down and say, well, you guys are suspended for a year for sign stealing, for having eyes and knowing what the duck means.
if they're going to do anything, if, you know, suspend Harbaugh now, take him out for the rest of the season, whatever you want to do, don't hurt the team. They didn't do anything wrong. You know, suspend the coach, make an example out of him. If that's really the route you want to go down, and someone's got to fall on the sword if they find them guilty, which they haven't yet. But if they do, do it sooner than later so the team has a chance to, you know, figure out what they want to do as they go into the home stretch and playoff run if they make it that far.
And then Harbaugh can jump to the NFL and not be a bad guy for abandoning Michigan. Win, win, win.
It's the Harbaugh jump to the NFL is like the Pete Carroll jump to the NFL the year before USC was ineligible from playing a bowl game.
It'll be interesting, though. I don't know if he does get suspended with all the drama that's been going back for, you know, he was already suspended once this year. If it goes back and forth, I don't know what NFL team is jumping through hoops to get him. I mean, he's done well with the Michigan team, but he hasn't, you know, gotten them to like four national championships, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I don't know where he goes in the NFL.
Oh, I think you and I, Craig, see college football differently, but I think that going to back-to-back playoffs with Michigan is like quite an accomplishment. I think that
I think there's a lot of baggage. Like I think pro teams are super excited about coaches that haven't had that chance yet, but have this innovative way of looking at football, whatever. Harbaugh's not that guy. Harbaugh's a motivator or whatever, but he still coaches an old school style of football. He's still like, he's had a chance in the NFL.
Do you mean baggage from his last NFL stint?
Yeah. Everywhere he's gone, there's been a little bit of drama. Like not whatever. So you either love the guy. All I'm saying is you either love the guy or you hate the guy. As a Michigan fan, I like the guy a lot. So I hope he does well wherever he goes. I'm just saying, I don't know if there's a lot of NFL coaches or NFL GMs saying, man, we just came off of a really shitty season and we got to right this ship. I don't know if you want to have him be the guy that may be coming with more baggage and a guy who was just suspended twice. But then again, I don't know. Urban Meyer got a job.
I feel like I think anyone who hires Harbaugh would kind of agree with you that his suspensions are a reflection of the NCAA having it out for him or having it out for Michigan, and not that he brings, you know, some great risk. And I think like if you're worried, I don't think you'd hire him. But yeah, you got to have a team that thinks that way.
Yeah, you got to find that GM that's like, and again, if you're looking for a head coach as a GM, it usually means stuff hasn't gone your way the last couple of years.
Yeah, you're not in a good spot.
All I'm saying is you're looking for a guy with outstanding character, outstanding football knowledge. You may be taking a risk, but you're taking a risk on, you know, a potential of upside and what that level is. Harbaugh, you know what you're getting. So, you know, maybe that's a team that you have a lot of good players and you just need somebody to turn them into a football team again. I don't know, but it'll be interesting.
More likely to be the head coach of the New England Patriots next year, Jim Harbaugh or Bill Belichick?
Yeah, Belichick, certain. I don't know.
It's
who would have thunk it 5 years ago?
This is something, and again, maybe as just like a knower of football, you can shed some light here. Bill Belichick, for as terrific as a schematic and in-game coach and developer of talent as he and the staffs he's put together have proven to be, he and whatever apparatus the Patriots have in place for this seem completely incapable of identifying talent in the draft. Like, if you go back through Belichick's entire tenure with the Patriots post-Brady, meaning like post-Brady's rookie season, and you look at their drafts, they've been miserable. I think if you put together Matt Slater and Dante Hightower, those guys have like 90% of the Pro Bowls by Patriots drafted players in the last 20 years. As you think about football coaches and football executives and the various skill sets that they ought to carry with them, how is it possible that Bill Belichick can know so much about how to win football games and so little about who's going to help him win football games?
I mean, I think everyone has to remember Bill Belichick didn't do well in Cleveland before he came to the Patriots. Like he didn't, he's not able to just turn things around without Tom Brady becoming Tom Brady. Right. Yeah. So that was a lucky pick in the draft, and maybe they saw a glimpse of talent, but if you're drafting somebody in the sixth round, there's a tremendous amount of luck that has to go into everything falling in the right place. And if, you know, injuries don't happen when they happen, he just happens to be on the bench ready to go, and give him 100% credit for it. He never looked back from that point on. But Belichick is not Belichick without Tom Brady all those years. I mean, Brady made a lot of very average players look phenomenal for years and years and years. I'm not talking about Gronk. I mean, but like the Deion Branches of the world, the Edelmans of the world, whatever. Like they're all really good players. But Brady puts them into that almost all pro status, you know.
Deion Branch won a Super Bowl MVP.
Yeah.
That shouldn't happen.
I mean, I'm not saying, you know, Belichick doesn't win a championship. Maybe he puts a good enough team together because he's one of the best defensive minds, you know, in the history of football, hands down.
And especially at the time, Bledsoe was a particularly good quarterback. Like there was something there.
So maybe something does happen. But at the end of the day, when that old is Brady making Belichick the coach he is, or is Belichick making Brady the quarterback he is? I think it's a little bit of both, but I think when Brady left, it was very clear that Brady could go to almost any team at that point and make them into at least contenders, if not world champions, because he's just that good, which is crazy to me for a guy who can't really run, who just kind of stands in the pocket, but he just has it. He's got the football IQ. He's got the arm strength. He just doesn't miss a pass when he needs to. And he, for some reason, he's able to rally the world around him when he needs it. And it's just, he turns those offenses into these elite offenses. So I think Belichick has a history of just undervaluing some of these positions and you know, that model of, you want a raise? See ya. You know, we'll just keep getting more draft picks. And they would draft 50 players in a draft and hopefully six of them hit, right? It's like a shitty photographer that's going out to shoot a sunrise and take 1,000 pictures and hopefully one or two of them are really the one. That's how I work. That's all I know. I don't want to take anything away from Belichick. Great, great coach and the Hall of Famer, one of the best of all time. Tom Brady did a lot for that man's career. That's hands down. And without him there, you see how hard it is to run that team.
Bill Belichick may have been a great defensive coordinator. I won't debate that. But look at the records. 249-75 with Tom Brady, 81-94 without. That debate about was it Tom or was it Bill? Not only has it been put to bed, it was smothered in its sleep, it's been buried, and now we laugh like, how did we even ask that question?
Yeah.
Not only does Brady leave, he goes to a middling Tampa Bay team, you know, decent team, and wins the Super Bowl next year. There's no question the entire thing was Tom Brady.
Unbelievable. Mm-hmm. So, Glenn, as we discuss, was it the coach or the quarterback for AFC East teams? I think you know where this is going. The murmurs are getting louder that Josh Allen cannot succeed without Brian Daboll. The Bills have been in a rough spot. They've pulled out a couple wins, but they just lost at Cincinnati, and they haven't scored more than 25 points in a game since October 1st. Josh Allen is leading the league in interceptions. We know, obviously, the Bills have had, you know, a lot of trouble with injuries on both sides of the ball, but I don't think any of us expected this team to be 5-4 at this juncture. So what do you make of what's going on? What would you change? How are you looking at the rest of the season?
I'm worried. I'd be lying if I said I wasn't worried, but, you know, their four losses are all one-score losses. Everyone's like, Josh Allen's leading the league with 9 interceptions. Fine. Mahomes and Jalen Hurts have 8. Josh Allen's also leading the league by far in combined touchdowns. It's not even close. So he's not the problem. Look, the defense is way hurt. So the only way for the Bills to even make the playoffs is you have to turn Josh loose. You can't just have him sitting back and playing boring football. The guy's not made that way. He's made to run. He's made to be excited. Made to hurdle people. he looks bored. He looks disinterested. And you feel, and the, you know, Ken Dorsey has to go as an offensive coordinator. They run about four routes, and everyone knows what they are now. That's why they're jumping. The same route is usually to Davis, either up the right-hand side or the left-hand side, and it's a 20-yard bullet. Everyone knows it's coming. And so the DBs know to jump that route. So, you know, and they don't even have to steal the signs. so, I mean, the offense is so predictable. It's going to be hard for them. They can still win the division. They're only a game behind, half game, sure, really, behind Miami. And Tua looked terrible at the end of that game against the Chiefs. So I'm a little bit worried, but you just got to be a creative, man. I've been saying it for 2 years now under Ken Dorsey. Like, if there was a good montage when Dable was calling the plays and there were flea flickers and all sorts of chicanery and the plays, and they just hitting guys wide open, Josh was catching touchdown passes. It was fun to watch. Now it's like, holy crap, this offense is bad and boring. And they can't decide, are we a running team? Are we going to give it to Cook, you know, 20 times and let him go for 110? Or do we abandon it after the first drive and then just throw the ball? They just can't figure it out. I think there's one problem on this team, and it's Ken Dorsey. The other problem is the defensive injuries, but they can be overcome by turning Josh loose because he has the ability to score 30, 40 points a game on his own, really. So just turn him loose and just go into every game knowing we just got to light it up on offense and just pray that we can make some stops on D. I mean, I think Cincinnati scored in the first three drives last week. After that, they held them to 3 points the rest of the way. So, you know, Sean McDermott made some good adjustments and slowed down that offense, but just got to turn that off. Got to turn Josh Allen loose. Too big of a talent.
Yeah, and obviously, the reason they lost wasn't Josh Allen. I mean, like, yeah, there was a couple of really bad fumbles and crummy spots that the rest of the team made there. That just can't happen.
Yeah, the Kincaid fumble late in the game, which would have put them down six. But he was, like, flying through the air. And, you know, it was a perfect punch on the ball. There's no way he could hold on to it.
But, no, but it's just, like, those are the things. I mean, Allen's so easy to look at for the fan base, but it's not him losing these games. I mean, he's keeping them in it. I agree with Glenn. Like, you can't have a gunslinger like that and just tell him, you know, hey, throw four times a game. If, you know, again, when you look at how many interceptions they have, he's also has probably the highest passer rating as far as, like, well, one, how many passes is he actually attempting to throw throughout the game? But, you know, he doesn't have 14 elite receivers. He's got Diggs, you know, who's good and you know, and a decent tight end. And I don't know. And so I think he's doing a lot with what he's got. They don't have an elite running back. So I think it's either going to be Josh carrying them to the playoffs or they're not going to make it. So let him do what he does best.
Yeah. And they're kind of the anti-2022 New York Giants in the sense that they're 5-4. Only one team in the NFL has a better point differential than the Buffalo Bills right now. Mm-hmm. And that is my Baltimore Ravens, who have played a hilariously easy schedule. Let's be very transparent, but they've only lost two games, both been by one score, one in overtime. They've looked really good recently. They beat Detroit, who's no slouch, 38-6, and they beat Seattle 37-3 in two of the last 3 weeks. I have no idea what to make of the Ravens. Absolutely no idea. I don't think they've played anyone good except maybe Cincinnati, but that was when Cincinnati was terrible. I don't think anyone in their division was very good. Eventually, they're going to play Jacksonville, San Francisco, and Miami all in a row, and I think we should learn a lot about them at that point. But this team is getting dangerously close to, like, runaway and hide territory here, at least in the division, but maybe in all of the AFC, given how I think we can expect teams like the Bills and Dolphins to just beat each other up. Like, look, I don't know if they're built for the playoffs. I'm not impressed with any of the pass catchers except for Mark Andrews. I think Lamar is incredible, but screw it, we're just going to let Lamar figure it out is probably not a sustainable way to run your offense. But man, the Ravens could put themselves in a really good position here in the next few weeks to not really worry about the end of their schedule, to put away the division, and to really make some noise. I have no idea how teams will perceive them as a playoff matchup, but I did not expect this beginning of the season to go this well for this team, especially when, you know, the big offseason acquisition was 50% of Odell Beckham. Like, it's been very surprising.
I think they just need to pile up the wins as much as they possibly can, strike while they're on top. Because they'll hit a cold streak. What they can't afford to do is hit that cold streak 2 weeks before they, you know, they go into the playoffs and then realize, oh shoot, we're, you know, I mean, that's exactly what happened with the Vikings last year, right? Like the Giants were facing the Vikings in the first round of the playoffs, and Vikings had a much better schedule. They were dominating some teams here and there, but man, their defense was so bad. Every Giant fan in the world was like, this is perfect. We're going to smoke this team. And they did. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, so you just don't want to be that team. And I don't, I think having Lamar is that difference maker, where regardless of who your defense is, you got to watch out for what he's doing, right? He can scramble for 30 yards at any point. He can throw the ball from anywhere in the field. He can make the plays that he needs to make. So he's a good weapon to have in your back pocket. But you're right. I think if they're going to go anywhere deep, they got to have a few of their offensive players and step up. Andrew's got to get healthy again. But then the rest of their receiving core and running backs have to just step up and say, I'm surprised they didn't make a move for a running back, to be honest with you, before the trade deadline. I thought that would be a great spot for King Henry to end up.
That would have been really cool.
That would have been great. That would have been.
They could have run back the Heisman backfield that they used to do with Lamar and RG3 and Mark Ingram. It could have been Lamar and Derrick Henry. Craig, it's your turn. The Giants have had, you know, probably the worst imaginable season. Daniel Jones is now out for the year. Tyrod Taylor's already on IR, so the team is now quarterbacked by some combination of Tommy DeVito and Matt Barkley. I didn't know Matt Barkley was still in the league. Good for him. He was on that team that Pete Carroll abandoned. That was then like the best team in the country, but couldn't go to a bowl game. That's how long ago this was. Their offensive line is like a couple wicker baskets or something. I have no idea what is going on with this team. I know the sentiments I see on Yankees Twitter are that they want the team to lose every game. They want them to secure the number one pick. And it seems overwhelmingly like people would like the Giants to draft Drake May. So lay it out for me. What's the ideal way for this season to end? And assuming the Giants have the number one pick, which I think they'll be in a dead heat with the Bears to see who can get it, what direction would you like them to go with it?
I mean, the frustration is you see a guy like Dobbs come out of Arizona, out of nowhere, step into that role and play really well for that team. Within a week, gets traded to Minnesota, knows four plays, doesn't know the offensive lineman, doesn't really have a full practice with his team, and goes out and plays the way that he plays. And the offense coordinators are able to adapt to this guy coming in. He steps up to the plate and makes every play that he needs to make and keeps his team on, you know, in the game, and they win. The Giants spent $40 million on a guy and invest in this offensive line that just, I get it, they were banged up for a long time, so it's tough to blame the starting offensive line. But the starting offensive line, you know, looked horrible when they played Dallas, you know, which led to all these injuries because they were chasing down interceptions and fumbles that happened. But at the end of the day, they just, from the get-go, this team hasn't looked prepared, and they haven't really stepped up to the plate as a collective unit. Like, there's no reason, I get it, that Crosby is an absolute monster for a pass rusher, right, for the Raiders. So I get stopping him with a weak right side of your line is going to be tough. Our defense should have been able to hold down some quarterback that I've never heard of before within running back who's okay, whatever, and, you know, and Devontae Adams. But other than that, they're really not loaded with 1,000 weapons that you really got to worry about.
And team that just fired their coach, too.
Yeah, and that's right. And they just fired their coach. Now, I love Antonio Pierce. It was cool to see him get a win, just not at our expense. But at the end of the day, like, that team rose to the occasion and they figured it out. So, you know, at some point, our team's got to either adapt to the fact that we got to get the ball out quicker. We got to change the routes that we're running to create separation. We've got to help our running backs find space. Like, whatever we're doing ain't working. So it's hard. Like, I get into every game thinking, all right, well, look, let's put up a good fight. If we lose, we lose, but let's choke it. And we don't, right? And it's just, it's frustrating. So it's, I'm almost at the point, and I've never thought this before in my life. If we lose, we lose, right? It's let's go get another quarterback out there, because I've been a defender of Daniel Jones for a long time just because I like his character and I like the fact that he's got grit and he's tough and whatever else. But watching him even start this last game, he looked like a deer in headlights again. He's overthrowing passes. He's missing wide open receivers and just doesn't look comfortable in an offense that he should look comfortable in. Still holding on the ball too long. And then when he finally scrambles after a couple of plays, he blows his knee out. And you're just like, it's not meant to be. So I wish him well. I hope he gets healthy. But he's not going to be coming into next year healthy. So they have to do something. Go get – if you're in the top five and that's the way the it ends up for us, you've got to grab a quarterback. Right? You've got it. Regardless of where it is, if it's not, Williams, then you got to go get May. Just because there's uncertainty. And after the second year, you can drop down and not lose that much money. It's still not great, but it's not the way the contract's structured. It's not the worst thing in the world. So, everything happens for a reason. Hopefully this is, if we're this bad, it's because there's a good quarterback class coming out. I'm not sold though on, I love McCarthy, but man, maybe it's just the looks of him. Kind of looks like Wilson from the Jets. So for some reason, I'm a little weary of that one. So past May, Pinnix looks great. I just don't know if he's got if he's just a real gritty college player or if he's, going to be a next NFL, player. So I'm probably watching more of the combine in the lead up to the draft more than I have in previous years, just if the Giants are in that top five, just because they're going to grab somebody. The crummy part is if Dan Jones was doing his job, they could go grab that tackle from Penn State or from Notre Dame and say, okay, great, let's just keep rebuilding this line and we'll slowly get better. Or go grab, the next best receiver or whoever else is available. But unfortunately, I think we're rebuilding.
Well, that's the cycle of a bad team, right? When you can, you get this super high pick and that's great, but you can only use it on one guy. You can use it on a tackle or you could use it on a quarterback, that makes it tough. I think, I doubt Giants fans would tolerate it. I'd be surprised if this idea appealed to you, but I might have thought about if I were the Giants, and I might think about in the offseason if I'm the Giants trying to trade away this year's first round pick, and try to secure another pick in the first round the following year, like what the Bears did. They're going to pick, two and four or something.
Well, the only good thing is they've got two second round picks too, and one of them is going to be super high. And they just traded with Seattle, so they have their second round pick. So what they inherently could do is take that top five pick, grab yourself a quarterback, trade your other two picks, grab something else in the top 10, include something for next year if you need to, go grab that tackle that you want to, and you're in that same ballpark, right? Now you got your quarterback of the future, you got the tackle that you wanted or the receiver, like whatever it is you need to do. So they've got draft capital to play with, and they'll have a ton of cap space next year too to grab the free agents that they need to fill some of those holes. So I don't know. It'll be interesting, but I'm like most Giants fans, we're sick of rebuilding. We just
– yeah.
At some point we got to – figure it out. It's amazing. It's when you see a good team like the Eagles, and this pains me to say, but you see a great GM like the Eagles have, and they're just constantly adding talent after talent after talent, and they figure out the cap and they figure out the short-term contracts, long-term contracts, but they are always layering in just the best available players, and they're so stacked. I mean,
it happened so fast. They won the Super Bowl 6 years ago, and every guy was different than the guys they have now.
Every draft pick they had was just best available player. Best available. Yep. Carter's there sitting at D tackle. We've got two of the best D tackles in the league, but we're going to grab another one. Doesn't matter, And they just, that's the ideal state. We got to figure out how to get there.
Well, we'll see what happens. I don't know that Tommy DeVito, who I saw play against the University of Notre Dame at Yankee Stadium in 2018 for Syracuse after Eric Dungy went down with an injury. I don't know that he's the answer, but he may be the answer to making sure that the Giants get a very high draft pick. So
I do love that. That's it. I do love the headband. It's tough to not like a headband solid. Guy.
Yeah, the at least if the Giants and Bears are going to lose every game, they can have ultimate vibes guys like Tyson Bagent and Tommy DeVito playing quarterback for them. Glenn, before we wrap things up here, any parting shots from you?
Wait, before we leave, what do you guys think about this indoor golf, the Tiger League? Is it you guys interested in it? You going to watch it?
I think everyone's watching night one. Everyone's watching the first night. The ratings are going to be through the roof. Where it goes from there all depends on how entertaining it is. You know, think back to like the XFL back in 2000 when they came out and, you know, the ratings were through the roof and then they just went straight downhill. And they even had a camera in the cheerleaders' locker room at halftime. I don't know how you beat that. But it's going to be – I still think most fans, right, don't know what it looks like yet. Even though they explain it in words, as visually.
Yeah, I think.
Right. It's off grass. It's off grass, big screen. But I don't understand the formats yet. Like, I don't understand. Is it alternate shot? Is it two person best ball? Like, what are they doing?
I don't really get it. I'll watch the first one, as Glenn said. I think the question is, what are they going to do to keep our attention? And it seems like obviously with the simulator and with the fact that they can change the shape of the green complex in real time, like it's at least not like they're playing the same hole over and over again. But my reservation is I watch the Home Run Derby once a year, and I don't know how much more often I'd be willing to watch the Home Run Derby. Well, I think the really interesting thing and the hard part for them is going to be what are they going to do to keep our attention?
And it starts out only.
Sorry, go ahead. Absolutely.
I say they're starting out other than like, I think their viewership is capped out at the age of the guys that can watch other people play video games almost, you know, because there's a huge market in that. It's gigantic, but that age is like, right now, like 35-ish or something like that. Anyone above that doesn't watch people play video games.
It's funny, though. It's funny. That's where I was getting at. My son will sit there for an hour and watch other people play video games, right? And I was like, don't you want to go get that video game and play yourself? He's like, no. I'd much rather watch. These guys are so much better than I would ever be. I just want to watch it on YouTube. So there is that audience of people just saying like, oh, great. And I guess it's no different of like, hey, Craig, don't you want to go play in the NFL? It's like, no, those guys are way too big and strong. I'd rather just watch them go, you know, beat the hell out of each other. But in theory, I don't know. So I don't know. I feel like I'm a lot more interested now than I was a month ago. More just more of the curiosity. But I feel like I don't know. Maybe this is the mystique of it all, too. I just don't know enough about it to, except for the silly marketing side. I feel like the teams. Logos and stuff.
Yeah, they have the live problem.
Yeah. I hired the same marketing team.
Exactly. And no one's going to look as good as Torque or whichever the one with the cool logo is. Range Goats. Yeah. Range Goats,
that's the best one.
All right. Now, as we wrap up, Glenn, any parting shots?
All I got is the Buffalo Bills have basically a playoff game on Monday night. And I think Josh Allen is going to come out swinging. I pray.
Love it. Craig, anything from you?
No, man. Just trying to sneak in as much golf as I can. Oh, you know, we got a couple of days in the 50s and 60s here. I'm getting out. Glenn and I had the ultimate match last weekend. I was up four to play. And little by little, not only did Glenn whittle away at the lead, but just laughed at me as the hole started to like.
I called it. I said, I'm four up with four to play, and I'm tying this match.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Yeah. So we tied, and it felt like the worst loss that I've had in a long, long time. It was
got to close those out.
But in Craig's defense, he did win, and we decided after a couple of John Daly's or three that we would finish off the match, and he won on the fourth extra hole.
Yeah. All right. Let's go.
I gotta get drunk, Glenn, drunk enough to win.
Hey, all's fair. Rutgers Scarlet Knights are going bowling. They're 6-3. The Bahamas Bowl is unfortunately not being played in the Bahamas this year, so let's hope they don't go to that one. It's a personal concern I have. The Rutgers Scarlet Knights are the number 70 team in KenPom. College basketball is back. They're 0-1, but it doesn't matter. You can listen to this podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Apple, Spotify, where there's video, or YouTube, where we are at One Club Short Pod. We're at One Club Short on Instagram. You can see all kind of content there, including Hole of the Week. We are at One Club Short and then the number 1 on Twitter. I love the merch we've been posting on Instagram lately. Got to get myself some of that. People can check that out. Our store is accessible there as well, at One Club Short. Craig, anything we missed? Anything people should be aware of before we wrap this one up?
No, if you got any holes that you shot yourself, please submit them. We'd love to not just, you know, have our own holes. So, Will, that includes you. Get out there and shoot a hole. And
let's do it.
Can either voice it over for you, you can voice it over yourself. But the more that's really open up to the community. So if you do it, hit us up on Instagram and send us what you got. We can tweak it in editing. We can voice over if you want. But the idea is to get as many up there as we can. So.
Love it. So participate with us at One Club Short on Instagram. Send in those holes of the week. Guys, enjoyed it as always. It was good to get back on the podcast. And we'll do this same time, same place, probably in a couple weeks. Till then, thanks everyone for listening.
See ya.